Hare Krishna, thank you all again for returning to our course on the study of Srimad Bhagavatam through the questions and answers which are discussed in this most important text of Bhagavad Dharma, the Bhakti Marg. So, to give us more time, I'm not going to go over my previous class, which I gave last Friday, except just to remind you that we ended up on the topic, kind of three-cornered topic, of the relationship of the Lord, the living entity, and the Lord Shakti, or potency, the Adya Shakti, original potency, of which is the Hladini Shakti, Srimati Radharani herself. And so because I'm praying to the Lord that we may have some time at the end for a few questions, and also we have some handout material and hand-in material to take care of, so I'm praying that I can... I got about halfway through my planned class on Friday, so I'm praying that I can finish this today in good order. So we'll just start. So the first topic of the talk today, as I indicated Friday, today we'll be getting into the questions and how they're answered. These are the questions from chapter 1 and how they're answered in chapter 2. And of these six questions, actually for our purpose of understanding, as we said, what's behind the second chapter of the first canto, we only need to discuss three questions, the first three questions. So that's all we're going to do. So question 1, what is the ultimate good for people in general? Ultimate good, also being known as the sum bonum, which means ultimate good in the Latin language. So this question is asking for a diagnosis. The sages, headed by Shonika Rishi, want to know from Sutta Goswami a diagnosis for what is interfering with the sambandha, with the healthy connection between the jiva, the Lord, and his energy. Now, often when we hear this term, summum bonum, highest good, our tendency, for those who have studied this philosophy for some time, our tendency is to jump immediately to think this is referring to prayojana. And that is not untrue, but you have to understand a subject in terms of its context of presentation. You see, just like Lord Krishna, in one sense, can be said to be everything. You see, we can truly say, according to our philosophy, sarvam kalvidam brahma. Brahman, or absolute truth, is everything. But if we just leave it at that, if we just conclude that is the only viewpoint, the only possible viewpoint that can be taken, then we are courting with the Brahmavadi or even Mayavadi philosophy. Because there are obviously other points of view which are given in our philosophy, that the Lord is a super soul in everyone's heart, and that he is the supremely independent and all-knowing and all-attractive supreme personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So you see, this is how our philosophy works. You have to be very careful about absolutely pigeonholing, you understand that, what I mean, putting into a pigeonhole any part of our philosophy into some box of your own understanding and saying, this is the absolute, ultimate understanding. So, although the sages raise the topic of summum bonum, the ultimate good, which is very often you'll find, Prabhupada identifies summum bonum with the 10th canto, the intimate loving pastimes of Lord Krishna, revealed in Vrajadam. He identifies summum bonum with that. The sages are asking this question in a particular context for people in general. Now, do you remember Sri Prahlad Prabhu's class? He was talking about Bhagavatam, the 10 cantos or 12 cantos in Bhagavatam, in terms of the form of Lord Krishna. So where is the first canto? Yeah, they are the lotus feet of the Lord. And what did Sri Prahlad Prabhu say about where we first approach the Lord? To the Lord, yes, we approach at the lotus feet. We don't immediately go to the smiling face. So if in the context of this verse, if summum bonum is taken to be prayojana, that for the people in general, we should immediately go to the Lord's Rajalila, Raslila, then what is that called? What type of philosophy is that called? Sahajya. Yes, that is Prakriti Sahajya. So this is the importance of understanding things in terms of context. So, just like you see someone, a friend of yours, and you see him getting up late in the morning, his eyes are all red, his face is sort of greenish, he looks down at the mouth, he's walking unsteadily, he looks nauseous, he's holding his stomach like this, there's a pained look on his face. Now you might ask him, my dear friend, are you okay? Now okay, that term okay, you know, it is something like summum bonum. You know, you understand what I'm saying? You know, it means you're asking, are you good, are you well? But obviously, why are you asking that question? Because you think there's something wrong with him. So it's actually a way of asking, are you sick? So actually what the sages are asking Sutta Goswami is how all these once healthy souls have become so unhealthy. Remember in my Friday talk I said, I quoted from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's The Bhagavata, where he states that when we see this world healthily, then we will see it as pure spiritual energy of the Lord. We will see the actual relationship between this energy and Krishna everywhere. We will not see this world as mere illusion, as the Mayavadis do. But we will see the purpose of everything, of every atom in creation. We will see its purpose in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the healthy vision. But to have that vision, we must be in a healthy state, a Krishna conscious state. So the sages are asking, actually in this question, how is it that these once healthy souls have become so unhealthy? They're asking for a diagnosis. It is just like doctors will come together, a team of doctors working in a hospital. And they have a special case. Someone has come in with an exotic disease. And they have returned from Africa, from vacationing in Africa. And it turns out they have, for example, there's a disease called Ebola, which is a very deadly disease. It can kill you in 8 days. You see, after you contract it and the symptoms develop, you can be dead within 8 days. And it's a very horrible way of dying. From every pore, every orifice of your body, you bleed to death. Blood starts flowing from your eyes, your nose, your ears, your mouth, out of your skin. out of the lower regions of your body, and you just bleed to death. All the blood just runs out within minutes. You see, on the seventh or eighth day. Very horrible way to die. And modern Western doctors are very, very nervous of this disease because they have no cure for it. Because it's so rarely seen. But they know there's some area in Central Africa where this disease is lurking. And they're afraid, they're very much afraid of an outbreak, what do you call an epidemic, spreading out of Africa across the world. Because then, to put it in American slang, then it really hits the fan. Then, you see, then the human race is really in trouble because a very deadly disease that will kill you in 8 days is on the rampage and modern medicine has no cure for it. So if an exotic person with some exotic rare disease comes to the hospital, the doctors will get together and they'll ask one another, what will bring this person back to perfect health? So perfect health is the summum bonum. That point will be raised in their discussion. But obviously this person is not in perfect health. So we have to understand the context of the discussion. So Srila Prabhupada, in the very next verse after this first question, question 1, which is text 9, verse 9 of Canto 1, chapter 1. So in text 10, according to Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavatam 1.1.10, which is spoken by the sages immediately after they asked their first question, describes the condemned state of affairs of the people of this age. I'll just read the translation of the verse. It's a very famous, famous verse. O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. The plight of the human beings in the age of Kali was of great concern to the sages of Naimasharanya. They therefore asked Sutta Goswami, how can souls in this such unhealthy state be returned to the pure original state of the jiva? That means in that pure triangle of uninterrupted, flowing, loving, flowing relationship between Lord, His own internal potency, and the marginal potency of the jiva. In his purport to verse 10, Srila Prabhupada writes, now please pay careful attention, because what he writes here has very much to do with why this Sri Rupanuga Vidyapeeth exists. So listen. The human life is especially meant for self-realization. That is to say, man should come to know what he is, what the world is, and what the supreme truth is. What are those three again?
What he is, what the world is, and what the supreme world is.
In other words, who is he?
Who is man?
Who is man or mankind or womankind? Who are they in reality? Yeah, but I'm asking a question now. Yes?
Jiva.
Yeah. They're jiva. And what is the subroop of the jiva? The true form of the jiva?
Krishna Nityadas.
Yes, Krishna Nityadas, eternal servant of Krishna. And what is the world in its ultimate reality?
The material
of the jail. The material energy? No cigar for you today. We heard Srila Bhaktivinoda explain what the world really is. Now, can you remember Friday's class? What is it really? Huh? It is Krishna's own internal nature. It is actually His spiritual nature, which we are seeing materially. God is Kali, she's the most popular deity in Bengal. You've seen with it all bluish with 10 arms, garland of human heads, red tongue hanging out, 3 fierce-looking eyes, big teeth, each hand bearing a different weapon, and she wears a little mini skirt. She's very fashionable. She wears a mini skirt which is sewn together out of severed human arms and hands. So, you know, if she went to some punk music club, she'd be the queen of the night. No girl there could compete with this one. As a song goes, everyone wanted to dance with her. This is Goddess Kali. But that is actually, Goddess Kali is actually none other than Srimati Radharani acting in a role. The spiritual energy acts in the role of the material energy because of what? That was made clear in Friday's lecture. Because of why? Because Krishna, is she doing that because Krishna just doesn't like us? Why is it? Who can remember?
Envy.
Envy. Enviousness, yes. We are envious of Krishna. We want to be Krishna. So therefore, Krishna's dearest devotee, she says, oh, you want to be Krishna? All right. Then you can have me as your energy. And then she assumes the form of Goddess Kali. Now deal with me. I'm your energy. And she has that trisul, the tri-shatraya, threefold miseries, and she immediately pierces the jiva with it. So therefore we get miseries from adhyatmika klesha, our own body and mind, simply our own body and mind, just sitting here. You see, we feel the cold. We feel an itch on our knee. Our nose, you know, starts to sniffle. Mucus starts to fall out. And we wipe it. We feel a pain somewhere. We just get tired of sitting on position. We have to move somewhere else. You see? Or our mind is agitated, disturbed, because we didn't get enough prasadam yesterday. You see, we're anxious for breakfast today. You see, your stomach is growling. So in so many ways, our own body and mind gives us trouble. And of course, we get trouble from other living entities. The mosquitoes come and bite us at night. Sometimes, like in my hut, famously, I was often harassed by these huge, monstrous centipedes, you know. I hate those creatures. I mean, I'm supposed to be, of course, as sadhus, we're supposed to be, you know, equal to all living entities, but there's one type of living entity I'm definitely not equal to, and that's these 5-inch long red centipedes. They call them bichu in Bengali, and scorpion is called karkara bichu, crab centipede. So just like snake and scorpion, centipede also should be killed on sight because they have such powerful deadly sting or bite. If they bite a child, the child may die. So especially mothers, don't think that you should just catch the centipede in a cup and chant Hare Krishna to it and dump it out the window. You should smash it to death on sight and make sure it's dead. Actually, the best thing to do is cut it into 4 pieces. Because if you just cut the head off, the body will go running off. And for all I know, the thing will grow another head because they're so demoniac. They cling to life with such fierceness. If you cut them in half, both halves will run in 2 directions. And then you have 2 centipedes later, for all I know. Yeah, just like that. They're really demoniac. So you have to smash them flat, or as they do in Hawaii, they cut them into 4 pieces. I've tried that. They're guaranteed they're dead. The 4 pieces will still twitch for a while, still trying to get out of there. But then they will stop and the ants will come and carry off the remnants. So, yeah, that's a footnote on how to deal with centipedes. But getting back to the point, centipede is also jiva and his swarup is also servant of Krishna. And we are doing the best service by killing him. Just like cobras and scorpions we should kill because we liberate them from that terrible low condition. So the human form of life is especially meant for self-realization. That is to say, man should come to know what he is, what the world is. The world is actually spiritual. And what the supreme truth is, that is Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, who includes within his personality both Paramatma and Bhagavan, Brahman features of the Absolute Truth. Human life is a means by which the living entity can end all the miseries of the hard struggle for life in material existence, and by which he can return to Godhead, his eternal home. But due to a bad system of education, I'll say it again, but due to a bad system of education, men have no desire for self-realization. Even if they come to know about it, they unfortunately become victims of misguided teachers. So then what are we talking about here? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in the Bhagavata, this is called Sambandha Jnana of the Bhagavata, or in other words, the knowledge of relations between the conditioned and the absolute. Sambandha Jnana. This is actually the subject matter of question one, even though the Summum Bonum is mentioned. But if we would jump and say, oh, the sages, their first question was about Krishna's nectarian and eternal madhural lila with Srimati Rani and the groves of Rajadam, the Rajavan, then we are nothing better than sadhyas, you see. Because they ask about how these fallen souls of Kali Yuga, how they will ever attain the Summum Bonum. Therefore, there's a process. And that is the next question. So what is the process called? Oh, scholars of this Vidyapit, if the knowledge of the connection is Sambandha, then what is the process called?
Avidya.
Avidya. So that is the subject matter of question two. Question two, what is the essence of all scriptures? Directly hints the remedy. So the first is the diagnosis. Question, what is the diagnosis? What is the problem here? You see? Knowledge of what is the problem and how it can be, you know. And then the next question is, all right, then what do we do to solve the problem? So, this question two, what is the essence of all scriptures, directly hints at the remedy for the break-in connection between the Lord and His eternal parts and parcels that have unfortunately fallen under the spell of Maya. The essence of all scriptures. Now listen to the voice, please. You're not paying attention. The essence of all scriptures, which is the subject of this question, is found in Srimad Bhagavatam alone, as Thakur Bhaktivinoda proclaims. Again, one moment while I surcharge my ki, my prana. Once more, a direct quote from the Bhagavata by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, originally written in the English language. Once you enter into Srimad Bhagavatam, you are transplanted into the spiritual world. I'll read it again. It's so wonderful. Once you enter into Srimad Bhagavatam, you are transplanted into the spiritual world, where gross matter has no existence. That's Shastra Shakshush. If you can learn to see properly, healthily, then there is no more matter. Certainly there is no matter here in Mayapur Dham. That's already a fact. And if we are seeing anything material here, we are really in trouble, because that's called Dhammapara. But even if you go to Calcutta, even if you go to New York, as Srila Prabhupada did. Once Prabhupada was on morning walk with his very first followers. And it was like some gloomy winter's day. And so one devotee made the comment to Srila Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada, this material world, look how terrible it is. And Prabhupada looked at him with that beautiful, beaming, transcendental smile of his, which was just like the sun breaking through all the clouds above the sky. And he said, if you could only see it properly, you would know this is Vaikuntha. So this is a healthy scene. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura goes on. The true follower of the Bhagavata is a spiritual man who has already cut his temporary connection with phenomenal nature and has made himself the inhabitant of the region where God eternally exists and loves. This mighty work is founded upon inspiration, and its superstructure is upon reflection. That means deep reflection, deep introspection of great, great personalities. Like Lord Brahma, starting with Brahma, who is the first in the line of Acharyas after Lord Krishna himself, who was the original source of the Bhagavata knowledge. This mighty work, we read that. So, to the common reader, that means to the ordinary person, it has no charms and is full of difficulty. We are therefore obliged to study it deeply. Now we're coming to abhidhyaya, the process. We are obliged, therefore, to study it deeply through the assistance of such great commentators as Sridhar Swami and the divine Chaitanya and his contemporary followers. Now, the great preacher of Nadia, who's that? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Tells us that the Bhagavata is founded upon four shlokas. Remember, what is the question? What is the essence of all scriptures? So the Bhagavata is founded upon four shlokas which Vyas received from Narada, the most learned of the created beings. He tells us further that Narada was given these shlokas by Brahma, who heard these instructions from the Lord directly. So to save time, I will not read the Sanskrit. But these are Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, verses 31 through 34. Once more, if you don't know the Chaturshloki, Canto 2, Chapter 9, text 31 through 34. And I will read you Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura's own translation of these four verses. I give you now, he's speaking to Brahma, the knowledge of my own self and of my relations and phases, which is extremely difficult to access. You are a created being, so it is not easy for you to accept what I give you. But then I kindly give you the power to accept, so that you are at liberty to understand my essence, my confidential knowledge, my form, my property, and my activities together with their various relations with imperfect knowledge. You see, even though your knowledge at present is imperfect, even with that, I will give you the power to understand all this. Therefore, we are here today, because who among us has perfect knowledge? But there is a process by which you can get perfect knowledge if you follow it, and that is called abhidhyaya. I was in the beginning before all spiritual and temporal things were created, and after they have been created, and after they have been created, I am in them in the shape of their existence and truthfulness, and when they will be all gone, I shall remain full as I was and as I am. Whatever appears to be true without being a real fact itself, and whatever is not perceived, but it is true in itself. You see, this is a twofold definition of Maya, that whatever appears to be true without being a real fact, and whatever is true but which is not perceived, as it really is, are subjects of my illusory energy of creation, which like ordinary light and darkness affect the living entity's power of perception. Yatha bhasa yatha tamaha. Just like we have day and we have night and we have our sight. So the world looks very different to us in the day than it does at night, is it not? That is the meaning of conditioning. We are conditioned souls. We do not have ourselves the power to see the night the same way we see the day, because we are tiny little jivas subject to the Lord's energy. So if we are on the wrong side of the energy, that means if we are on her illusory side, with our chest puffed out, our jaw jutted out, I am the Ishwara. I shall take control of you, my dear. Then we are put under this insurmountable Daivihyeshi Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratiya, this insurmountable power of Maya. And our vision is affected, you see, by day, night, by all these, what are they called? Dvanva Mohina? The delusion of duality. Heat, cold, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, good, bad, right, wrong, white, black, so on and so forth. On and on. The world is full of dualities, and that is taking up all our attention. And knowledge of these dualities is what passes for knowledge in the world of the deluded. In the academic universities, that's all they're teaching is dualities. You see? Therefore you get yes, no questions. You see? True, false questions. But either way you answer is false. Because the subject is only Maya, illusion. So, these four verses, the famous Chaturshloki, are the essence of the Bhagavatam, and so it doubtlessly follows they are the essence of all scriptures. The Thakur comments further. The whole of this incomparable work teaches us, according to our great Chaitanya, the three great truths which compose the absolute religion of man. Our Nadia preacher calls them Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. That is, the relation between the Creator and the created, the duty of man to God, and the prospects of humanity. In these three words is summed up the whole ocean of human knowledge as far as it has been explored up to this era of human progress. These are the cardinal points of religion, and the whole Bhagavata is, as taught by Lord Chaitanya, an explanation both by precepts and by example of these three great points. Precepts means, you could say, even theory, although not in the theory of just haphazard speculation, but the conceptual presentation of the truth. An example means what in Sanskrit? Please, someone's got to know this. What does it mean to give the right example in the Sanskrit language? Achar is the verb form, I believe, or the achar, or noun form, behavior, conduct, proper conduct. And acharya is one who is doing that. So, yes, we must follow the acharyas and do the achar. So it's achar, prachar, and then there's vichar. Vichar means taking our understanding to a deeper level by discussion. The discussion may even be like seemingly argumentative when we ask questions and get answers and we debate points of philosophy. Like I was debating the other day with Murari Gupta, not debating in the sense of I'm right, you're wrong, but we were discussing the assignment of the verses in our study guide to the actual six questions. And so we talked about that, how we had, for our study guide, reversed the order of two, according to Prabhupada's purports. And he was raising some doubts about that, he was seeing how they could be reversed the other way. And he was saying, it does seem to be that's what previous acharyas may have said. And I said, yes, but my reply is yes, but we don't know that for sure, so we are sticking to Prabhupada's purport. So we went on like that, a few back and forth. So yesterday I talked with Burijan Prabhu, and I said, so how are the questions actually assigned to the verses? And he says, even the acharyas don't agree. So therefore, safest course of action is to follow the words of the founder acharya. Always follow the acharya, that is the Abhideya. Otherwise you can get lost in what? In the speculation that passes as Sambandha Gyan. That is not Sambandha Gyan. Aimless mental speculation, which is ungrounded in the Shastra as given by the Acharya. Mm-hmm. So, moving on, so that we may have some time at the end. The third question, why did Sri Krishna appear, concerns avidya. So, the second question, you see, is actually presenting all three. The answer presents all three, actually, the essence of scriptures. Certainly is also about avidya, but is actually about all three, the proper answer. The essence of all scriptures is sambandha, avidya, and prayojana. But you see, we are moving from the first question, sambandha, to the process, to avidya. But already, all three have been mentioned, because that is the process. Avidya means understanding that there is. Will you agree with me, Maharaj? Avidya means understanding. We have to understand, at least on the conceptual platform, intellectual platform, platform of purified intelligence, that there are these three topics, and they are the essence. Maharaj concurs? How can you have proper avidya if you don't know that there's prayojana? If that is not at all discussed, if that's an unknown, the X factor, then you don't know why you're doing what you're doing. You see, you're being told to worship the deities. Why? Well, that's for later. You're not advanced enough to know that. You just wave the incense and offer the deep and the chamra and say these mantras, and you'll find out later. What do you become then? You become some kind of like smarta brahmana or something, you see? Just ritual. It's just ritual, empty. And that is not avidya. So in avidya, prayojana is explained, but it is not vastu vastanam. It is vastu vidyam, vastu that is known, but it is not vastanam, actually perceived through purified senses, the original spiritual senses that are now covered, you see. Prayojana means to awaken those senses and reconnect all of our senses to Krishna's senses. Okay, so moving on. The third question, why did Sri Krishna appear, concerns avidya directly only. Because the answer to the question is to reclaim those in the mode of goodness. The same question opens up the subject of prayojana, the ultimate aim and need of our lives. That was what I was just explaining, so I don't need to explain it again. Because the subject being inquired about is none other than the Lord Himself. In His original form as Sri Krishna, the source of all incarnations, He appears in this world to personally show the way to prayojana for souls who take up Bhagavad Dharma, rejecting all other dharmas as cheating. About avidya, the Thakur summarizes, we must now attempt to explain the second great principle inculcated by the Bhagavata, i.e. that is, the principle of duty. Man must spiritually worship his God. Further down in the text of his book, Srila Bhaktivinoda expands the theme of avidya as follows. This is rather long. Our nature has been described as bearing three different phases in all our bearings of the world. Those phases are named sattva, rajas, tamas. Sattva guna is that property in our nature which is purely good as far as it can be pure in our present state. Rajaguna is neither good nor bad. Tamo guna is evil. Note. This is a note from myself to you. Bhagavata 1.2.27 remarks thus on the two lower material modes. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living beings, and the demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities, for they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. End of my note. The Thakur continues, our pravrittis, or our tendencies, and affections are described as the mainspring of all our actions. You see? Our inner pravrittis, tendencies, what we want out of life, are the spring, the power behind what we do. And it is our object to train up those affections and tendencies to the standard of sattva guna, as decided by the moral principle. This is not easily done. All the springs of our actions should be carefully protected from tamoguna, the evil principle, by adopting the rajoguna at first, as decided by the moral principle. And when that is effected, man should subdue his rajoguna by means of the natural sattvaguna, which is the most powerful of them cultivated. Lust, idleness, wicked deeds, and degradation of human nature by intoxicating principles are described as exclusively belonging to tamoguna, the evil phase of nature. These are to be checked by marriage, useful work, and abstinence from intoxication and trouble to our neighbors and inferior animals. Thus, when rajoguna has obtained supremacy in the heart, it is our duty to convert that rajoguna into sattvaguna, which is preeminently in the heart. Which is preeminently good. That married love, which first cultivated, must now become sublimated into holy, good, and spiritual love, that is, love between the soul and soul. So, from love between male and female, marriage should become love between soul and soul. Love between two equally realized servants of Krishna. Useful work will now be converted to work of love and not of disgust or obligation. Abstinence from wicked work will be made to lose its negative appearance and converted to positive good work. Then we are to look on all living beings in the same light in which we look to ourselves. That is, we must convert our selfishness into all possible disinterested activity towards all around us. Love, charity, good deeds, and devotion to God will be our only aim. We then become the servants of God by obeying His high and holy wishes. Here we begin to be bhaktas, and we are susceptible of further improvement in our spiritual change. All this will be covered by the term abhideya, the second cardinal point in the supreme religious work, the Bhagavata. Now this is so extremely important, and we have such short time, so I just have to move on. Chapter 2 of the first canto is replete. This chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, is such an important chapter that those who want to become great scholars of the Bhagavatam, you may just learn every verse of this chapter, because every verse is extremely important. So I'll give some outstanding examples of verses that substantiate the above purport that we just heard by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One is the famous Tarmas Vanastita Pungsan Vishvakshena Katasuya Nutpadiya Gigiratim Svamahi Eva Kevalam. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Verse 8. The next verse reads, Dharmasya hi apavargasya natura tartu pakalpate natasya dharmakantasya kama labdhaya hi smritaha. All occupational engagements, now that means under Varnashram Dharma, are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.9. Now I want to comment on these two verses, because I attended Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Dhamma discourses, which he gave in September of 1972 in New Vrindavan for about 1 week. They were officially titled the Bhagavad Dharma discourses. Srimad Bhagavatam classes each morning. And what was Prabhupada talking about? He was talking about these verses. He was talking about Varnashram Dharma in Krishna consciousness, or as the very first sentence of the lead article of the old Back to Godhead magazine, when they used to, instead of categorizing them in volume and number. They used to just categorize them as numbers. So there was Bhagavad Gita number 66. It's a very, very old issue of Back to Godhead, which must be like a collector's item by now, if you find it. But I think if not the very first sentence, then in the very first paragraph, Prabhupada states there, the Krishna consciousness movement is Daivi Varnashram Dharma. And this is Avideya. Therefore, I want to remind you, when I started talking yesterday, I was telling you about Sukha Goswami. What did he do when he was born? He immediately took sannyas. He did not accept initiation or any other reformatory process. He did not learn anything about Varnashram Dharma. He just walked off into the forest. Why? Why was that? Because he was a Nastika? You see, another meaning of the word Nastika, according to Srila Prabhupada, is one who rejects the Vedas. The Buddhists are therefore called Nastikas. They are atheists, and they also reject the Vedas. So did he reject all this Vedic reformation because he was a Nastika? No. It was because he was already on the what platform?
Avaduta,
Sigarillo.
Mahabhagavata,
Sigarillo. Huh?
Bhakti Yoga.
Bhakti Yoga, Sigarillo. Actually, not even that, because Bhakti Yoga actually means Uttama. The practice. Uttava, Sigarillo. I'm talking about in terms of the essence of all scriptures.
Dharma.
The essence of all scriptures.
Prayojana.
He was on the Prayojana platform, so he had no need to practice Avideya. You see? It wasn't actually because Varnashram Dharma is simply materialistic nonsense. You know, we used to sometimes hear devotees say, there's also Vedic nonsense. Well, there is in a sense. You know, worship of Goddess Kali for a Vaishnava is Vedic nonsense. But when someone, this Chattopadhyay Patel, at a morning walk in Juhu, raised the question of meat eating is to be totally, utterly rejected. Prabhupada contended with him, saying, no, there is even a place for meat eating for those who worship Goddess Kali. And this chapter by Patel became very agitated about this. No, meat eating is very bad, because he was only on the moral platform, you see. Moral platform, that is, as we've heard the Thakur explain, that is in Rajoguna, mode of passion. This justice, this distinguishing between moral right and wrong, and making someone into a good citizen, and putting someone behind bars, and putting someone under, you know, severe restrictions and regulations. From henceforward, this devotee shall not be able to stay overnight and in his ISKCON temple, etc., etc. Anyway, things like that are in the Rajoguna. You may want to rewind and erase that on the tape. That's my personal opinion. So, anyway, Sukadeva Goswami walked off because he was on the Prayojana platform. Not because he was rejecting Varnashram Dharma in toto as something being useless and nonsense and simply in the modes of nature. But even Varnashram Dharma under the modes of nature, at least Rajoguna, Tamoguna, we have heard the Thakur say, can come under the Avideya category. If these first two verses I read, the famous, what is Dharmasya Svanastita Pungsang and Dharmasya Hi Apavargasya. I just want to make sure. Yes, anyway. Then we go on. Shinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridayanta Hir Badrani Vidunoti Suhritsatam. Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul, in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire from material enjoyment. From the heart of the devotee was developed the urge to hear his messages. That is what is supposed to come out of this following of Varnashram Dharma. We've heard that. Huh? That Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojana. What is it? Shrami Eva Kevalam. That if your duty
Dharma
Sunustinta Punksham Vishvashin Kartasya. If your duty you are performing under Varnashram Dharma does not provoke more interest in hearing about Krishna, then it is Shrami Eva Kevalam. You're wasting your time. But if it is provoking more interest, then it is good. It falls under Abhideya. Even if it is Varnashram still tinged by Rajuguna. Even if we can go down that far and count it as Abhideya. Mm-hmm. But now we're coming to the point of getting purified from the modes of nature by the process of hearing. So next famous verse from second canto, Nasta Prayeshu Yabhadreshu Nityam Bhagavad Savya Bhagavad Sipatipanath Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. By regular attendance in classes of the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart. And that will be explained in the next verse, what those troublesome things are. All that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service under the personality of God, it is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. And now let's hear about the troublesome things that are destroyed. In Bhagavad Gita 1:2:19, that verse I just read was 1:2:18. Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lubdhayas chaye chayate navidim stittim sakti prasidati. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. You see? Then one is no longer in the material categories of Varnashram Dharma. One has risen above that. Then the devotee is established in Shuddha Sattva or Vasudeva Sattva. Shtitva Sattva is a particular term used here. Steady goodness. And becomes completely happy. That means he's never bored. You see? He's never bored in devotional service. He never thinks when he comes to round number 10, oh, boy, that's enough of this. I just got to put the bead bag down and do something else. This is just too boring. He never in the Bhagavatam class, you know, does dive bomber shravanam. You know? You know those old planes from World War II? The Stukas? They would dive down and drop a bomb and then climb back up. So there's a thing called dive bomber shravanam, hearing according to that process, where class is going on and someone's going, That means he's still under the modes of nature. You see? So when one rises above the modes of nature, then he's established in the Vasudeva Sattva, pure goodness. That means devotional service is no longer boring. He's always enlivened by it. So then, let's just read the translation. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge. Vijnanam means realized knowledge of the personality of God in the stage of liberation from all material association. Then he's known as a liberated soul. Next verse, 1:2:21. Thus the knot, we've read this already, thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all doubts are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. Then finally, I want to read the Sanskrit here. Satvam rajas tama iti prakritir gunastaya yukta para purusha ekka ihasya dathe. Stityabdiye hari varinchi hare tisamdya shyamsitattva khalu shaktvatunaryanam shu. This is 1:2:23. The transcendental personality of God is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance. And just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction, he accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. You see? So we should be, first of all, Abhideya means to first of all work to the mode of goodness, and then even to transcend that, to come to Vasudeva Sattva, and then even to go higher into Bhava Bhakti. And then at last, prema bhakti. This is to me, this is what it means to follow the lotus footsteps of Sri Shukadev Goswami and Sri Rupanuga Goswami. And of course, our divine founder, His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai! So to finish, Prayojana in Srimad Bhagavatam is presented by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We must now proceed to the last cardinal point termed by the great re-establisher. That means Sri Chaitanya. Prayojana or prospects. What is the object of our spiritual development, our prayer, our devotion, and our union with God? The Bhagavad tells us that the object is not enjoyment or sorrow, but continual progress in spiritual holiness and harmony. The Bhagavata does not allow its followers to ask anything from God except eternal love towards Him. The kingdom of the world, the beauties of the local heavens, and sovereignty over the material world are never subjects of Vaishnava prayer. The Vaishnava meekly and humbly says, O Father, Master, God, friend and husband of my soul, hallowed be thy name. I do not approach you for anything which you have already given me. I have sinned against you, and I now repent and solicit your pardon. Let thy holiness touch my soul and make me free from grossness. Let my spirit be devoted meekly to your holy service and absolute love towards thee. I have called you my God, and let my soul be wrapped up in admiration of your greatness. I have addressed you as my master, and let my soul be strongly devoted to your service. I have called you my friend, and let my soul be in reverential love toward you, and not in dread and fear. I have called you my husband, and let my spiritual nature be in eternal union with you, forever loving and never dreading or feeling disgust. Father, let me have the strength enough to go up to you as the consort, to up to you as the consort of my soul, so that we may be one in eternal love. Peace to the world. Now that's real beautiful prose. That is so Nectarian. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. So I want to sum up. I'm just coming to the end. The time factor is upon us. Where is Prayojana explicitly presented in chapter 2 of Canto 1? Read the whole verse and then end. Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Mukha, Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Kriya, Vasudeva param Jnanam, Vasudeva param Tapa, Vasudeva para Dharma, Vasudeva para Gatahi. This is Bhagavatam, chapter 1, canto 2, verses 28-29, which mean in the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please Him. Therefore, in the school, sacrifices are being performed, fire sacrifices. Yoga is for realizing Him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by Him only. He is the supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know Him. Religion, Dharma, is rendering loving service unto Him. He is the supreme goal of life. Thus ends this class, and now we must come to the practical affairs of turn-ins and turn-outs. So you have things to turn in, especially that 100 rupee note, because I am not above the road of passion, unfortunately. We are only asking 100 rupees here. Please give. Plus enrollment sheet, plus your essay. Now about that essay, it will be corrected tonight, and it will be returned to you tomorrow with my essay, my answer to the same question, so that you have something to compare your essay with. I'm not saying my answer is supreme of all answers, but I'm saying it will give you a good idea of what I'm looking for in essays. And we also have some other things to give you. A short statement of the course objectives for Srimad Bhagavatam summarized as questions and answers, so that you will know better the mood of this course and what we want you to present when you are asked to volunteer to come forward and present, and when you ask questions and when you enter into discussions here. This will help you understand the mood. And we have also... did they sign this already?
No.
All right, please sign our attendance. This should be handed out during the class. This is the way it's done in the GBC meeting. So you also have to sign this attendance book. Just sign your name that you were here. And please give the date, or the date should be at the top of the page. And we also have an explanation to give you of the levels of student commitment to this course so that you understand that there are 5 levels, so that there's no confusion of what you're doing here. All right? So please come forward and hand all that in and receive your handouts from Kashi Mishra. Kashi Mishra Prabhu is right here to do all that hard work. The essay is for him. Just make one file for hand-ins and give him his handouts. As they hand in, you hand out. And then he must sign. One at a time, please. Please form a line, a queue. Everyone, please form a queue, please. A line. We'll try to do this as quick as possible.
He's going to tell us about the level of commitment. His 5 stages.
You're going to get it. That's the handout. Yes. Oh, he's asking you to hand out?
Yep.
Okay. So here, you get your handout from him. Hand in to Kashi Mishra, handout. I'm sorry, you have
Shanti
Puran Prabhu. Yes, my tendency is to call you Shanti, but I know that's not your full name.
I answered that.
Yes, those are the handouts. And I apologize. Maybe we can use this time for quick questions. You always seem to have a question.
I have this question of defining semantic gyan. Then you say so.
Mission forms.
Mm-hmm.